now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I thank you for joining me. With me in the studio today, it's the very excellent Alison Rudd, who's qualified referee, as I might have mentioned once or twice. And also, yes, the favorite of Gooners everywhere, it's Stuart Robson. Later on, we're going to be discussing an issue that made a big splash for us in the game this week, Pep Guardiola's anger at that shock horror tackle on Leroy Sané. But first, we're going to start at Anfield in what I thought was the most eventful tie of the fourth round. Alison, let's get this over with. Deja vu all over again. Horrendous defending from Liverpool. We'll get to the VAR in a minute if we have to. Klopp says it is not allowed to concede goals like that. And what do you do when it's really so bad?
Yeah, well, it wasn't. I think a lot of Liverpool fans and commentators have looked at Liverpool's side and felt it is unbalanced, that Klopp hasn't given the attention to this his goalkeepers and his back four. It's usually a back four, as he has his attackers. But this was not, even allowing for the arrival of Virgil van Dijk, this was not just about not having the best defenders and goalkeeper in the top half. This was about just defending as a group, and the midfield was fluffy, lightweight, all over the place. Equally, Liverpool often defend from the very front. Their attackers were off the pace as well.
Okay, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Wijnaldum played super the week before, right, against City. I guess it wasn't the week before, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
And then in this game, it's the same two people, and they're terrible. And at the back, you talk about organization and whatever. I saw a bunch of individual errors. Trent Alexander-Arnold just sort of standing there and letting J-Rod run right past him. And Matip as well. And wait, what is it when was it the third goal where Matip runs and the ball seems to kind of go right through him at the far post? Well, what is this? You can't blame Klopp for that. This is individual errors, right?
Well, no, I think it's good. I think it's a team error.
Some of it is Klopp, because he talks about defending from the front and he talks about pressing the ball. And I've spoken to some of the people that do all his video analysis, and they don't do enough work on the back four as a unit and what happens if their initial press gets broken. The third goal is terrible defending. First of all, they allowed Dawson to win a header unchallenged when the ball's hit on the diagonal. It goes out the box. Emre Can is standing next to him, walks up, and instead of just marking on the right side, the ball gets played back in. Half the team are squeezing up the pitch. Half the team are backing off. Dawson's onside. That's a lack of organisation. And I would go back to the 80s, 90s. Tony Adams, people like that, Martin Cohn, were not great footballers. They couldn't play out from the back. They weren't particularly good individuals. They were made to be great defenders, or very good defenders, along with Steve Bould, by the fact that George Graham worked day in, day out with the back four. Jurgen Klopp works a lot on the pressing side of the game. He has to do more work on the defensive side of the game when it gets into their back third and when they lose possession, when the ball changes hand. Emre Can wasn't good enough. Wijnaldum wasn't good enough. Oxlade-Chamberlain weren't good enough when the ball changed hands. I mean, the way, I think it was Krikoviak, went past Emre Can for the second, it was just too easy, far too easy.
But Gab, you asked why is it like this now and it wasn't like that against City. It's because against City, Liverpool gave all that energy so that every single player no matter how individually talented and creative they're supposed to be, they were pressing and pressing and pressing and closing down and closing down. That's contagious. So if your attackers are doing that, your midfielders lift their game and the defenders feel protected and alert. I have said before, when Liverpool click, they are irresistible. And really, when I've said that, I've been talking about their front four or front three. But actually, the whole of Liverpool have to click for them to be irresistible.
When the front players are pressing, as Alisson's saying, and the midfield players are pressing, the defenders don't have to make such quick decisions because they can see the ball. It's 30 yards away. Players are having to make runs in behind. They can see that happening. When it bypasses those, because they haven't defended well enough, now they've got to make very, very quick decisions. And too many times, they made the wrong ones. Yeah, Van Dijk on the goal where Rodriguez scores and puts it brilliantly, he gets run out the way by Robson Kanu. You know, he's got to go to the ball. He made the wrong decision. You know, and that's something you have to do day in, day out to make sure you get the right shape about your defending and you make the right decisions. You can't just go out on a Saturday and say, well, let's make the right decisions now and this is what we're going to do. You have to do it every day in training.
I just find it just inexplicable how this crap keeps happening when, you know, we've seen Klopp's teams defend better. And, you know, you can go and blame the individual quality. I thought actually this time it was more about individuals making mistakes than the collective. The sort of the collective issue is still there. This is not Atletico Madrid we're talking about.
Can you honestly say that Liverpool, their midfield players, and you mentioned two, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Wijnaldum, played with the same energy, the same dynamism, and the same effort as they did against Manchester City.
They didn't. But if Matip doesn't get his legs in a tangle, then that goal doesn't go in. It's right there. It's how hard is it to clear it, right, for a player of his experience and athleticism.
But there was many things that were wrong before that for that ball to be going into the goal there.
No, I know, but that's why it has like a multiplier effect because by the end, because ultimately people make the kind of individual mistakes that in normal circumstances get covered.
The goal that was disallowed. It's Dawson going up with Firmino. How could that happen? It's 4 yards out when he heads it. Where's the goalkeeper? He's 4 yards out. The ball was a looping cross into the box.
He's being shielded by the evil Gareth Barry.
He made no attempt to go past Gareth.
Matthew Syed, incidentally, big piece on Gareth Barry today. Yeah. And longevity. But that's okay. I mean, Firmino let him win the header because he knew that, you know, VAR was gonna sort it out. On the subject of this seemed to me like the first VAR game where we had a bit of a VAR backlash.
Second one, Chelsea Norwich in the FA Cup. There was a lot of criticism of that.
First one, at Brighton. There's a lot of criticism because no one knew whether it was even being used or not.
Well, sorry, excuse me. All right, I'm talking about semi-valid criticism by people who've taken the time to understand how it works. In the first one, it seemed that the criticism was all about on the final goal. Like, did they look at this picture? Did they look at that picture? Doesn't matter. It was a valid goal. You know, he could have looked at a postcard and it would have mattered. In the Chelsea Norwich game, I thought it had more to do. Why was it not used on the Morata dive? Well, you can't use it. And obviously the other one was the Willian one, which, fair enough, it came down to interpretation. But I don't think it was criticism of VAR taking too long or whatever. Here you had this whole thing with the Salah incident, and people went on about it, and then people complained about the spontaneity of the goal being disallowed because of Dawson's goal or the West Brom one? So I think in that sense, it sort of turned. And I sort of felt that...
What do you mean by spontaneity of it?
All right, this is one of the things that always gets me. One of the biggest complaints, and I think people know that I'm a VAR proponent to the degree that I think we've decided to have a trial. Let's have a trial and not raise stupid objections and try to see if it works and if it makes the game better and if people want to continue using it. People always bring up this issue that, oh, after you score a goal, you're not allowed to celebrate. You have to sit and wait and see if the goal's see if everything's fine and VAR says the goal is okay. Now, I experienced this at the Confederations Cup in person, and yeah, it was a bit jarring. But by the same token, you have this all the time. People score goals and then afterwards, you know, the linesman sees an infraction or a flag goes up afterwards. You know, you must have had this as a player. How many times did you have the coitus interruptus of scoring a goal? Maybe not you, but seeing it scored. And then all of a sudden you take a step back.
Yeah, of course you did. You know, and
did that spoil the game for you forever?
Not at all. And it doesn't spoil the game for me now. I've commentated on lots of games with VAR. I cannot see anything wrong with it at the moment. And for all the criticism, even the Willian thing we talked about against Norwich, I still think it was the right decision because you couldn't be clear that the foul had taken place. Willian was going down before the player made the contact. And because he hadn't given a penalty in the first place, he can't change his mind. I think it's worked very well so far, and I've got no complaints with it. And I've commentated on probably 50 games with VAR, and I can't see a problem with it at all.
Well, let's ask our qualified referee.
I wrote a dystopia a week ago about not a prediction of how VAR will impact on the game, but a fear for how it might impact on the game. And one of the things I said might happen is that players are just too scared to celebrate any goal because what will happen is that goals that would have been allowed because the decision is marginal and you give the benefit of the doubt to the attacking team, even when you feel as a player, you know, we got it right, we were moving right, and we, you know, the attacker was on the shoulder of the last defender and it felt right, and you celebrate because you feel it's right, and in some way celebrating helps the decision go your way because there's a flow to it. You're going to be offside now by 0.001 of a millimetre.
That's good, isn't it?
No, that's not good. It really isn't good. That isn't what football is.
Really?
Yeah, going always to the measurements.
If the referees leave play to go that little bit longer when somebody's running through one-on-one on the goalkeeper, you'll get more goals scored as well because linesmen will put their flag up. The referee will let it go on. They'll score the goal, and then they say, "Let's go back." The linesman was wrong. It's a goal. So there will be times when a goal is given.
I'm assuming you're against goal line technology as well, then, because a goal can be scored or not scored based on 0.001 of a centimeter as well, right?
No. I think goal line technology isn't about. That's not about what I just described as that flow of the game. That is.
Alison,
that is a straight fact, and any striker who is told it did not cross the line would know that. But if you are on the shoulder of the last defender and you knew 3 weeks ago when there was no VAR that goal would have been allowed, and now you're scared that it won't be, I don't know. It just feels like the spirit of the game is gone.
Does it mean the players won't take their shirt off and sling it round their head and then throw it into the crowd? Because that's a good thing if it stops them doing that.
There's nothing wrong with that, I don't think, either. I'd change that.
So I'm going to go back to a second. So you think that...
I think it's a danger. The
one thing that we're people who are on the fence on VAR would agree that, oh, look, now we can use it for totally objective decisions, like whether somebody is standing in a position of offside or not. You say, well, that's not good because it could be very close marginal offside. Before it might have been given.
Yeah, because there's a thing in football about giving the benefit of doubt to the attacking team when things are so close.
First of all, that's not in the directives anymore. Second of all, the whole benefit of the doubt to the attacker thing, that's done. But secondly, the whole point, though, is that you give the benefit of the doubt when you have a doubt. Now, you don't have a doubt when it comes to offside. So what does that mean? There is no benefit of the doubt because you know if somebody's offside or not.
The linesman's putting his flag up and the referee's blowing his whistle for offside when the player's running through on goal. Now, once he's blown for offside, he can't then say, oh, well, I should allow that to go on. He's got to allow play to go on, allow the player to have his shot to see whether he scores, and then have a look back at it.
That's one of the drawbacks, and that's why assistants are told only flag for offside if you are 100% certain, because obviously you can't call it back in that situation. I don't know how often that actually happens in a game, and
it happens nearly every game that I've done on VAR, where a ball's played over the top, the linesman's put his flag up, the referee's blown the whistle quickly. Then when we see the replay, he was actually onside, and it was almost a goal-scoring opportunity.
So statistically, that actually is very, very rare, because assistant referees have been given that instruction. What might have happened in other situations is there's something else going on, a defender that's, I don't know, somewhere else on the pitch, or somebody coming back from an offside position, or people crossing, and that's maybe where somebody's flagged when they shouldn't have. But, you know, they were making mistakes before as well. Now they make a lot fewer. Alan Pardew raised another serious issue with VAR. Is his players had two hamstring injuries, which he...
You can blame VAR for one or two things. You can't blame it for players getting injured.
Why? Well, there was. The, what are you, a physio?
Probably his wrong training. He had two hamstrings, and then they had a player late on in the game that was struggling with a hamstring, and that was down to VAR, was it? That's what he tried to insinuate.
Yeah.
Because the players were hanging around. It doesn't take that long, VAR. What a load of old rubbish.
Now this season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, and the FA Cup. And it's just £3 for a three-month trial. I think that's an exceptional deal because you also get all our excellent content as well. Alison, what was your favourite goal of the weekend in the FA Cup?
Well, I'm going to go for J-Rod's second goal
against Liverpool. Because
I'm a masochist today. I've always admired J. Rodriguez, and his cruciate ligament injury came when he might have been on the cusp of World Cup glory. Who knows? He was certainly in the best form of his career. He always seems like an exceptionally lovely chap. And when he plays, I think this was the game which proved he was starting to play well. I love the way he sort of ghosted in for that second goal. It was sort of impish and confident and completely in tune with his teammates, and it was in front of the cop, and I think that is something worth celebrating for a bloke who's kept going despite setbacks.
Sure.
Kevin De Bruyne's free kick. I mean, it's one thing thinking about it.
Can I just say about that? He made it seem so simple. He's like, afterwards, like, yeah, sure, well, the wall was really close, so it's going to be hard to put it over it, so it was obvious to put it under it. Yeah, obvious to you, not to everybody in the wall.
It's not just the thought. It's actually to strike the ball cleanly, it usually comes off the ground. If you're going to strike it with any sort of power, it usually comes off the ground by a foot or 2 foot. For him to actually do it with that amount of power and to get it underneath the, all the way along the ground is a good bit of skill. It's great technique from him.
Spurs were also held by a team called Newport County. When I thought, when I think of all the magic of the cup stereotypes and whatnot that we throw out there, Newport County kind of, I've never been there. I've only watched it on television.
So you didn't burn down their clubhouse?
It wasn't me,
okay.
No.
You've never been. See how he was quick to say he'd never been. I think he protested too much.
Just to make it clear.
It was that little fag he had around the corner, wasn't it? Yeah.
But it did strike me that, like, this is it, right? The way that ground looked on television, the conditions, it was all ripe for this, right? Mm. Have you've played in conditions like that?
Absolutely. I was part of the Arsenal team that lost to York City, a famous defeat, where half the pitch was icy because the sun hadn't been able to come over the stand, and the other half of the pitch was a quagmire. So you had to wear, depending where you were playing, you had to wear different boots for different halves. The pitch was terrible condition.
This was in the 80s?
This was in the 80s.
Didn't New York City also nearly knock out Liverpool back then?
I think they played Liverpool after Arsenal. They drew with Liverpool and then lost 5 or 6 at Anfield. But
It thawed.
But there was lots of games that you played like that. And the leveller wasn't so much the surroundings, the stadium, it was the pitch itself, you know. And that was the leveller with Newport County against Tottenham, because Tottenham still thought they could play into midfield, and the ball, it takes longer to control the ball because it's bobbling, so you can't get your head up, so you have to take your first touch instead of playing first time round the corner. Newport knew that and closed the ball down. They did it very well. And Spurs didn't really realise what the conditions or how they had to play in the conditions. They had two centre forwards in Kane and Llorente, bypass the midfield, get it into the, and then start playing from there.
And what? The floodlights. They didn't like the floodlights.
Oh dear.
Which is ridiculous for Vertonghen to complain about the floodlights before kickoff. What message does that spread to the team? It says, oh, we don't like this.
Absolutely. It's the wrong message straight away, isn't it? You're saying, well, yeah, this isn't good. You know, they could cause us a problem because the floodlights aren't, the pitch isn't very good.
You have to just get away from that. When a football guy answers a football question honestly, like, how is it different here? What are you thinking about? And he honestly and innocently says, well, actually, I don't like the floodlights, blah, blah, blah. We're not used to it. Now you go and mock him?
Yeah.
See, this is kind of
cuter than that, Gav. You've got to be cuter than that. You can mention the floodlights, but don't mention it like that.
Why? Why play these stupid games? Why not be honest about it?
It's great to be somewhere different. This is the magic of the cup.
See, this is why. Then we get all these this inanity of, like, stupid, meaningless, empty quotes.
Say it after the game. When you've won 3-0, say, the pitch was terrible.
Yeah.
But the problem is,
they drew. So then if you say it afterwards, it sounds like, oh, look, big baby for Tongans making
when
excuses.
When you win 3-0, you
can otherwise say. You don't say anything. Yeah, great. That's wonderful. Seriously, I'm sorry, Jan, if you're listening. Please continue speaking openly and honestly the way you always have.
Manager,
don't listen to these two harpies.
Would you be glad that your players were picking up on things that were negative?
Yes, because it means that they were aware of them.
Well, they clearly didn't react properly.
If when players or managers say, I knew that West Ham would lose on Saturday against Wigan when I heard the press conference that David Moyes gave on the Friday.
Well, thank you, Nostradamus.
Because he's putting every negative thought into the player's mind. He's almost making the excuses before he gets there. And that's what happens when you do that.
I think you should give a little bit of credit to Wigan as well. We have a wonderful story in the game today. And Alison, you can help me by turning to said page and telling me this dude's name because I have no idea what it is.
Gavin Foxall,
who I thought he was the chairman of Newport County, but he's not actually, is he?
Well, his full title, the chairman of operations.
He's the chairman of operations.
COO.
Yeah. And can you just summarize that? Because I thought it was wonderful. So for those who don't know, what happens in the FA Cup, and this is an age-old thing, I know we have listeners from all over the world. When you, I think you get, is it 15% of the gate receipts if you're the away team in the FA Cup? And so Newport County, the host Spurs, obviously the gate, then they'll sell out, but because it's a tiny ground and it's the size of the studio, they're not going to get much money. But because they got the replay 1-1, they get to go and play at Wembley, which I'm assuming won't sell out, but it's going to be a massive crowd, 50,000, 60,000, and Newport will get 15% of that gate. So it's a really big deal to them. It's a really big deal traditionally for smaller clubs in this country because it's just a big payday above all else. So
they
what's
need the money. They need the money more than ever because there was a tumble dryer defect in one of the buildings at the training ground. And this building was multi-purpose. It was the players' bar. It was the players' relaxing area. It was...
Let's go relax next to the tumble dryer.
Had their gym stuff in it. It was sort of multi-purpose, basically the only place for the players to go. And they don't have it at the moment. So they can rebuild it. And it was burnt down by you smoking a fag, claiming you never were there.
Yes, clearly. I just think it is one of those wonderful little FA Cup type stories. But by the way, listeners out there, if you do own a tumble dryer, proper venting is essential. Seriously, it's worth spending a little bit of extra money to make sure that it vents according to European Union regulations and European Union standards. Now, after Brexit, y'all can do whatever you want. Burn the house down for all I care because it's going to be a free-for-all. But for now, just for your own safety, it's really worth paying attention to that.
Just take the fluff out.
Or put it on the washing line.
Or put it on the washing line.
Put it on the washing line in this country. Do you think it's ever going to dry? Final point on Spurs. Lucas Moura, we're reporting today that they're very, very close. Let's just pretend through the magic of podcast that this deal is announced today. Stuart, if it goes through, does this make sense? Is this a good reclamation project, given that he's basically been pants for the last 18 months?
I'm not sure.
25... Hungry to restart his career?
Yeah, I think he's a good
player.
Are you getting the
Brazilian Lamela?
Yeah, I think obviously Lamela's will be the player that's most in danger.
He's only got 6 months to go in his deal. He's
a different player to Eriksen. He's not really a passer of the ball. He's a runner with the ball out on the right-hand side. Dele Alli's a different sort of player to him. So he might give them something a little bit different to what they've got. And he's a bit like Son. Son will play at the left-hand side. Lucas Moura would do the same on the right-hand side. He can go past people. He's got a bit of pace. He's a decent cross of the ball. It's an okay signing.
Is he motivated?
I think he'll be motivated coming to Spurs.
To be fair to him, I mean, Neymar comes in and you're kind of done, right? But I'm still a little bit surprised by how quickly he sort of disappeared out of the picture of PSG. But I suppose for that kind of money, probably a gamble worth taking.
And our reporter at that game was Gary Jacob, and he points out in the game that he would be the 22nd arrival under Pochettino, and 18 will have been foreign. And there's this sort of myth that Pochettino's great for English football, but he doesn't buy English.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Love the game? Then don't miss The Game Daily. It's your lunchtime update from football's finest writers, and it's only at thetimes.co.uk. Now, in our debate this week, we're going to turn our attention to something that happened in Wales, where Cardiff were hosting Manchester City. Cardiff aside, for those who, like me, don't follow the championship, and yes, I had to look this up, are a team that are in the playoff spots in the championship, which I'm told is the second tier of English football.
I think you knew that.
No, it's where all those teams that get relegated disappear to. So City won 2-0. There's some controversy with VAR, but I think what stood out a lot was Pep Guardiola got extremely animated and extremely angry, especially at one point in the game. There's a player named Joe Bennett. You probably watched the championship, so you probably know who this dude is. I have no idea who he is.
I haven't watched that much championship.
Who was playing with a lot of drive and energy and enthusiasm and putting his boot in. That's one way to look at it. Other way, he's just running around kicking people. And at one point, he put in a really, really nasty challenge on Leroy Sané. And if you actually see this, this is a challenge where he goes and he catches him in the ankle and you actually see his ankle buckle. Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, early indications are they're talking 3-4 weeks. So it was horrible to look at. Now, Pep came out afterwards and talked about the need to go and protect players from nasty tackles. It's not exactly a novel idea. People have been saying this in different guises. But obviously, it's Pep Guardiola saying it, and we've just had it. Nobody's going to disagree with this, are they?
Well,
but the question is, how do you protect them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been blown out of proportion slightly because it was a dangerous tackle, and if it's a dangerous tackle, you should be sent off, and he wasn't sent off. So there was an error made by the official during a period when we are talking about VAR, and this would have been actually, because he didn't give him a red card, so it wasn't reviewable in that sense. Oh, but the voice in his ear would have said, you need to have a look at that because you can change your mind
if it's a sending.
Yeah.
It depends who's in his ear. If it's some kind of freaking Neanderthal who thinks that red cards spoil the game, then
exactly. Or the referee still has a chance to say, no, I'm absolutely confident that was not dangerous. That was...
I know the VAR rules, I think, better than most people here. So what would have happened had this been a VAR game, these are the steps that would have intervened. So the tackle goes in, Mason gives him a yellow. If the VAR and his assistants see replay angles that suggest, and they don't have much time to do this incidentally, that suggest that it probably warranted a red card, then they see it as a clear and obvious error that this was not punished with a red card. Then they get into Mason's ear and they say, hey, Lee, you need to take a look at this because we think that it was clearly and obviously a red card. At that point, Lee Mason can say, nah, you guys don't know what you're talking about. which happens very, very rarely. I think there's two cases in Germany, I think, where it happened, but, you know, whatever, they're German. But in general, this does not happen. And at that point, Lee Mason would make his little sign, kind of like in Pulp Fiction, and he would trot over to the screen. He would look at the screen, and then he would either change his decision to a red or say, nah, you know what, even after looking at it, I still think it's a yellow.
Players are far more protected now than they've ever been, because there's so much video evidence. Every game in the top flight is on the television. If somebody makes a bad challenge, that's going to be highlighted. They're going to look back at it. They can't do anything there and then, but there's going to be a lot of players that are going to that see that they've made bad tackles. Years ago, there was so many more bad tackles. Players went out to hurt other players. That doesn't happen anymore.
Reducers, right? That was a term?
Some of the best players. The best player...
Martin Keown...
No, the best player, one of the best players I played against, was Graham Souness. As a footballer, he was magnificent passing the ball. He ran midfield. He was a leader. He was also the dirtiest player you would play against. There's no question about it.
Right. See, this would take us on a long digression, which I really can't do. But what I would say about that, what I find absolutely astounding, is I don't know that there's a player, because so many people have said he was dirty, you can go and see how dirty he was. I don't know there's any other player in history, I mean, in this country, who was as talented a footballer while also being as dirty, who was in that sort of perfect overlap of the two spheres. And
are you talking about Graham Souness?
I'm talking about Graham Souness, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering if today, with the evidence, with the attitude today, Graham Souness would have to completely change his game because he'd sign for a team based on his ability and he'd be getting 3 match bans, 4 match bans, and then he just say, all right, screw this. Let me get some other guy to go and be the goon. Because that was the case back then, right? Well, in Souness's time.
In my very second game, I'm 17 years old. We're playing at Anfield away. And it's the replay of a League Cup game, League Cup quarterfinal. In the first game, Ray Kennedy, playing for Liverpool, got sent off for headbutting Peter Nicholas, who made a meal of it. He didn't headbutt him. And as we lined up in the tunnel, Graham Souness...
Peter Nicholas? The Welshman?
The Welshman.
Peter. Oh, right, because if he were English, he wouldn't have cheated. But
so
yeah.
Graham Souness looked down the our line and said to Peter Nicholas, you won't last the game. 20 minutes into the game, Peter Nicholas came off with a 6-inch gash on the side of his knee. And nobody saw it because it was so late. Graham Souness had carried out what he said he was going to carry out, and that was it was sort of half accepted.
Is it what? Well, football was different. In this very room, I interviewed Graham Souness about his autobiography, and he was never given any instructions by his managers. No. He was told, "You look after each other." Mm. It was what you did. You looked after each other.
Yeah, I heard that. I buy that to a point. Because correct me if I'm wrong here. Weren't there also? I seem to remember, and this is before my time, but in the 80s, didn't most teams have somebody who was basically a midfield who they had one guy who could play and one guy who was just a goon? No. And again, Steve McMahon, I'm sorry, even Liverpool, right? I'm not having a go at him, but, you know, he was sort of that. Or was it Jimmy Case I'm thinking of?
Jimmy Case was a very good footballer, though. When he went to Brighton, he was their outstanding passer of the ball.
Yes, he's an outstanding footballer at Brighton, which is like being an outstanding footballer at Real Madrid. I'm sorry,
no,
come
it's,
on.
You're talking absolute rubbish, Kevin. It's harder to be a... He was playing in the Premier, or the First Division.
I didn't want to mention Vinnie Jones, but they will.
For Brighton. Jimmy
didn't
Case.
Every team have players like that? Most teams have somebody
but you're,
like
you're
that?
But you're saying one was a goon and one was a player. Leeds, when they were the top team in England...
Oh, Billy Bremner, yes.
Billy Bremner and Johnny Giles were both bad tacklers. There was Jack Charlton. There was even Peter Lorimer would put in bad
what
tacklers.
What about bite your legs?
Norman Hunter. Lots of teams. That was part of them being a good team.
Let's take this back into the present. Neil Warnock said, well, what does he expect? He's in England now. Right? That's his reaction to Pep Guardiola, to Leroy Sané, to all these people who are shocked that Bennett would have put in a red-blooded tackle.
If it was any team in the Cup at the weekend that you said who would commit bad tackles based on who their manager was, it would be Cardiff. Because, I mean, this is a manager that ended up trying to get more players sent off so a game would be cancelled when he was at Sheffield United, when they ended up with 8 players on the field and he was trying to get them down to 7 so the game would be finished. So I'm not surprised that Cardiff have committed one or two bad fouls. That's in the manager's DNA.
And if you're Cardiff and you're facing Man City, what are you going to offer? what are you going to say to your team to make them think they can possibly get anything out of it is to say, well, they're a bit effete, they're a bit posh. Come on, let's give it, let's give them something serious to think about.
Now, until a few years ago, there were people who said, let's protect talented players. We all like seeing talented players, but we're losing the art of defending, or, you know, we haven't quite got the balance right, or it's gone too far towards the protection of gifted players. And I was actually thinking back to sort of horror tackles, and this is entirely anecdotal, entirely my impression. Maybe you guys have different impressions, but in the last 2, 3, 4 years, I just simply don't remember as many really nasty, ill-timed, dangerous tackles that, you know, that leave somebody out for a long time. Even stuff that's maybe not mean-spirited, but dangerous, going back a few years. The Shawcross on Ramsey one, which caused tons of debate. I think even Shawcross would argue that, you know, he certainly didn't mean to hurt him, but a big, heavy guy going in that way, you know, he might choose not to do it today because maybe it might get punished differently or whatever. Have we gone a little bit too far in that direction?
I don't think you want dangerous tackles, but what is happening now is that players are getting sent off for too innocuous challenges. We're booking players too readily. I think there are less dangerous challenges, and that has to be right. You don't want players breaking their legs. You don't want reckless challenges, but you need to still be able to tackle and not give away a free kick just when there's any sort of contact.
I'm imagining that you've been in the Bennett situation. You were in that situation as a player where pacey guy runs through, you're coming at him from the side and stuff. You have one shot at him. And I mean, this might seem like a silly question, but he could have just tripped him. Because he obviously, I mean, you go into tackle if you think you're going to win the ball. I'm assuming Bennett knew there was no way he was going to win the ball. It was just impossible. But if he wanted to break up the attack, he could have just sent him tumbling. He could have just tripped him, right?
I think where times have changed...
Or is that an unfair decision?
I think when times have changed, you used to go into tackles thinking, I might win the ball here, but I might get the player. And you were okay with that. Now, you've got to be fairly sure you're going to get the ball. And particularly when somebody's running sideways or running at 90 degrees to you and you're coming across, if you don't time it perfectly, you're going to commit a foul.
Do you think Bennett believed he was going to get the ball?
What Bennett should have done was have made the tackle in front of Sane to try and block the ball rather than going at the ball where it was. That's where he made the mistake.
At the risk then of having Sane jump over him, in which case, though, he could then lift his leg and just trip him.
Yeah.
If your goal is to stop a
counter-attack, yeah, you could do it without hurting
the player. But obviously, if he slides in front, then he's not going to get the ball.
No, if he slides in front...
He's got zero chance.
No, Sane might kick the ball into his foot. So you're trying to block where the ball's going to go.
Or Sane might just cut on a dime, let the guy slide past them and then take off.
You're talking about a split second. So that's the decision you've got to make.
30 years ago, well, people have said, oh, Bennett tackle, that was an honest tackle. You know, a bit harsh with the yellow.
No, they'd have still said it was a bad tackle.
They still would have said it was a red card.
Yeah, I would think so. You got away with a whole lot more 30 years ago, and there's no question about it. And probably 20 years
ago. But that was a red card 30 years ago.
Yeah, it was a red card.
Not just with a soft Southerner like you going and making that argument, but it was a red card.
I think when people look back at it on a replay, they'd say, yes, but this was happening week. There was no television watching every game.
I just have to accept that, you know, Lee Mason, when you're going back to your argument, your benefit of the doubt argument, and I'm giving Lee Mason a massive benefit of the doubt here. At that stage of the game, it was on television. Cardiff go down to 10 men here. This is going to get really ugly very quickly. Let's preserve the spectacle. He obviously fouled the guy. Let's just give him a yellow, and he knows he's not going to do it again. And then, of course, actually, the way I saw Bennett kind of seemed to take that yellow card as a license, as like, ooh, let me go and like chop down some more players, because frankly, at this stage, you know, he clearly doesn't have the cojones to go and send me off. But, you know,
it's interesting you say that, Gab, because I felt the theme of the FA Cup weekend was that referees were slightly more lenient when there was a disparity in league position. I did feel that. I felt that in the Spurs game, the West Ham Wigan game. There was that sense, just a slight sense of, let's try and adjust that we've got two different styles going on here, and you know, half a season behind a club that had been playing in a different type of football.
Enough of this. How about some quick hits instead? Chelsea roll to a 3-0 win over Newcastle United as Michy Batshuayi grabs two goals. Alison, you were there. Should that be enough to get him a bit more love from Antonio Conte?
Probably it should. You've got to hand it to Batshuayi. He's not started often, but when he does, he might not always be effective, but he definitely works hard. And he scored twice against Newcastle. I gave him the man of the match. I think a lot of people did. Conte's...
For the tap in and the other one...
No, because it wasn't. Because he is accused of not scoring enough when he starts, and because he did work very hard. And he did. He started one of the moves that led to one of the goals. He was integral. And he does have an understanding with Chelsea's key players, especially Hazard and a little bit with Pedro. So although I'm not convinced Conte does have love, maybe he should have.
10 goals this season. 12 if you count the nonsense and the Checker Trade trophy or whatever the hell that is. One goal every 107 minutes of senior football for Michy Batshuayi this season. Yes, although that includes like a hat trick against like Northampton Town Wanderers or something like that. But anyway, Arsenal's chase for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang continues. Apparently really, really close. Stuart, you love to talk about the Gooners and their signings. Is this really what they need?
It's the player they needed at the beginning of the season, and then they went and bought Lacazette. Aubameyang, I think, is a better version of Lacazette. They're the same sort of player. I don't think they'll play together. So it's an admission that Lacazette hasn't been a good signing, but Aubameyang is better. So it's it would be decent for Arsenal.
So then Lacazette can move into the Giroud role, or the one of like the French centre forward who doesn't play. Perfect, yeah. It's Francophone fun at the Emirates. Pep Guardiola came out and said something interesting this weekend. He said, he talked about how, look, City can't go and buy everybody for £80 million plus and whatnot. And then he goes and buys Aymeric Laporte, who is not an £80 million player, but isn't far off that. Somewhat weird signing, which to me, by the way, suggests that Pep might be staying beyond his allotted 3 years because Laporte is very much a project. But there was a backlash to this, Alison, which was people saying, oh, look, you know, Pep complaining about not having much money. Is that what Pep intended, or is he being a little bit disingenuous here?
I know people who live in very grand houses and go on skiing holidays, might even have a second home, and they love nothing more than when they go down the pub to say, oh, I'm a bit short of cash. I can't stay for another drink. I'm a bit short of cash. There are people who, no matter how much money they have, like to portray themselves as having difficulties and working against the system. And I think Pep just wants to remind everybody that he's still a manager and a coach who has to manage and coach and isn't just given everything on a silver platter.
Is that what I'd really love to know what he actually meant, because I don't know. I mean, the reality is Manchester City are not as strong financially, and they have financial fair play compliance hurdles that, you know, are less than a lot of other clubs. But Manchester United, if they wanted to, could go push the boat out much further than Manchester City could. It's simply a fact. And I don't know, maybe he was sticking up for that or whatever. I don't think it was interpreted by the media, certainly the way Pep wanted it to be, which doesn't mean he's right or wrong. Alexis Sanchez made his debut in Manchester United's exciting win Friday over Yeovil Town. Robbo, thoughts?
Well, what Alexis Sanchez will give Manchester United, he'll give them that little bit of quality in the final third, and he will make the right decisions. Rashford, Martial, Lingard are all decent. Lukaku's a decent player, but when they come to that final decision, the shot, the final pass, it's not always the right one, or it can be a misplaced pass. Alexis Sanchez will make the right decisions, and he will create more goals for Manchester United than they've been creating at the moment.
Were you on this Alexis right, Alexis left conundrum? Like, does he have to play on the left, which then means Martial and Rashford can be rehomed? Or
no.
He can play on the right, yeah?
He can play wherever he wants. He can play behind the front player if he wanted to. That's where I thought he might play. I thought Lingard might go out to the right, Martial to the left, and Sanchez in behind.
West Ham lose at Wigan 2-0, which may be a blessing in disguise. But Alison, Arthur Masuaku makes headlines for spitting at an opponent, and he could face a 6-game ban. I believe some dude from Leeds got a 6-game ban for spitting in the last round. Does that seem equitable to you? Or as I think one newspaper pointed out, Joe Bennett will get nothing. Hey, funny enough, it's our paper. It's the front page of the game. Whereas poor Masuaku, simply for relieving himself, And by the way, it was on the back of the player too, right? It's not like he spat in his face or anything. We'll get a whole six games out.
Yeah. I think this is the one area where being a woman doesn't help me because I don't get it. You can spit at me on a football field. I don't care. Every bloke I know thinks it's the most disgusting, terrible thing that could happen. And I know
Not every word and not every bloke you know, because we have a column in our paper by...
Tony Cascarino.
And also David Priest as well, if I'm not mistaken.
They still think spitting's a terrible thing, though.
Well, I don't think most people, unless there's some weird fetish, think that it's pleasant.
No, it's not. It's not a good thing. But I don't know how it evolved to be the most terrible thing you could do professional.
It's a strange thing to do. Why would you want to do it? Why do you think, you know?
So it's a way of showing your contempt for an opponent.
Yeah, but it's not going to do you too much harm, is it? It's a disgusting thing, but it's not anywhere near as bad as somebody trying to break your leg.
Ritualistic, though. It's just ritualistic. It's like, when you watch it at any level, if someone spits, then everyone is allowed to act like something absolutely, like someone's taken out a machete and gone mad. It's like, you're expected to react that way, so it feeds into it generation after generation. This is the worst thing that can happen on a football pitch, when it quite clearly is not.
Watford's new coach, Javi Gracia, makes his debut with a defeat at Southampton. The fans don't seem to be very happy. What do you make of the new Hornets boss?
It's an interesting one. I've looked at his record. I don't think he did a particularly good job at Rubin Kazan
Did a fine job at Malaga for a while.
Yes, and a difficult time for Malaga. That's where I think he's made his reputation. So it's a strange one. I think he did okay at Osasuna as well. But his win-to-loss ratio, it isn't particularly good. He's done better with teams from lower levels, getting them up at the moment. Watford are in the Premier League, so he's got to try and keep them up. He's got to try and reunite all the players. He's got to try and reunite the crowd to the players as well and to himself. I think it's going to be a very difficult job for him.
A lot of enthusiasm, though.
Right, we've done a lot of plugging of the game today. And another plug, because Gab has a great column about
really
a chap.
Good, isn't it?
Really good, about a chap called Cedric Bakambu. Is that how you say it, Gab?
Bakambu, yes, Bakambu? From Villarreal.
And no one knows who he is. And yet, he's going to be the fourth most expensive striker in history, isn't he?
I think a lot of people know who he is, given that he's been playing in La Liga for the past 3 years and has played in the Europa League. But what's interesting about him is that he's moving, or he's supposed to move, to China, to a team named Beijing Guoan. And he had a release clause of around about £35 million, which Beijing Guoan paid. However, in China, the Chinese government, to stop capital flight and whatnot, they imposed a luxury tax of 100% on any transfer spend on an overseas player over £5 million. So this would be a £65 million transfer if it goes through and they end up paying this tax, which would mean that Bakambu, who, I mean, I'm sure you've seen him, is a good player. He's exciting, but he's 27 years old. I don't think he's ever scored that many goals in a season. His record is like 1 and 2.5 at Villarreal. He'd become the most expensive center forward in history after Romelu Lukaku, Gonzalo Higuain, and Luis Suarez. Because it was a buyout clause, his club, Beijing Guoan, are going to argue that, well, we don't actually need to pay this luxury tax because we're signing him as a free agent. He put the £35 million down, and now he's a free agent, and funny enough, he wants to come to us. I have no idea if they're going to be allowed to get away with it. I certainly hope that they don't, because it's kind of disingenuous to think that Bakambu paid £35 million of his own money to buy his freedom. So I think it's a case to be looked at, because it seems very obvious to me they're trying to avoid the spirit of the law by observing the letter of the law, and it's all down to the Chinese authorities whether they'll be allowed to do it.
Why don't we get the buzzer when you're talking? We only get 20 seconds.
This is a complicated story. You asked easy ones. Ooh.
It's a quick hit.
Robbo, what do you think of Alexis Sanchez?
It's a quick hit. And no, you go
this,
on
is,
for
this is outside the quick hits. This is in the Gab One For You section. Right, that's all we've got time for this week. Many, many, many thanks to my excellent guest today, Alison Rudd, who's a qualified referee, and Stuart Robson, who's not. Remember, it's just £3 for a 3-month trial. Just search the Times online. And remember, you can access highlights of every single game in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and the FA Cup. We're going to be back next Monday for some Klopp versus Poch, which is Liverpool and Spurs. And we'll be joined by a former Arsenal defender early in his career, and England international who scored in a World Cup. I'll leave the suspense to you to figure out who that might be. Till next time, bye-bye.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.